I've last week probably changed about, oh, I don't know how many diapers. And I can just about do it in my sleep. Honestly, I've gotten so good at it. I'm just like, okay, you know, you just wrap them up and there you go. But it's been funny now that we, in our family, he's the fourth nephew in our family on Megan's side. And the first, Jonah, who you've heard me talk about before, when he was little, I remember we were in Houston, and we were enjoying good old H-Town, and Jonah loved to be naked boy. So he'd run around, you know, little kid, just run around naked, and just so small. And I remember we were just kind of like, what a life, you know, you just run around naked, you know, you don't really care. You just kind of poop, eat, sleep, and that's it. I mean, it's really sweet life, honestly, isn't it? I mean, we, you know, no care in the world. Well, he kind of waddles in, and we're all sitting in the den in Megan's sister's house. And he begins, I don't want to be too crass, but he begins to grow what I call a monkey tail. In other words, he starts pooping on the floor. And we all kind of like, we're kind of like watching him, and he's just standing there, just going to the bathroom in the middle of the den. No diaper on. It's kind of like, what? Man. And then we just, again, what a life. You know, like, you just kind of, on command, whenever, wherever. And we start just laughing. We're like, this is just hilarious. Can you imagine? I mean, things that he can do now are just totally frowned upon, right? I mean, anywhere else, and for good reason. But we started laughing, and poor little Jonah, I mean, he's like two, he starts crying because he realizes we're laughing at him. He realized at such a young age that he was doing something wrong. And he didn't, it wasn't just that he was wrong, but he felt shame. He felt ashamed of what he was doing. He felt ashamed for being naked and pooping in the den, okay? And I'll tell you, I think it's interesting how shame is. It's such a destructive, powerful thing that it's not something that you develop over time. It's something you're born with. You're born ashamed. Something you feel right now, something you felt this last week, something you felt this last year, is something you felt even when you were little bitty that you dealt with. Shame is one of the most destructive, most powerful forces and emotions that can render you unworthy, unloved, unimportant, and you feel everything about you is that way. It could be anything as small as you saying something dumb in a conversation to really falling out of line in some way in life, right? And you feel completely ashamed. Listen to what, I've brought this book up to you before. Again, I'm going to plug it. Cry of the Soul by Dan Allender and Tripper Longman. But listen to what this quote they have about shame in there. No other emotion, listen to this, no other emotion better portrays hell. No other emotion better portrays hell. The utter loss of intimacy, wonder, and joy, its corrosive effect is so strong that it can mold our souls and shape the direction of our lives. Shame is so painful that we react against it perhaps more than any other difficult emotion. But we must face the dread of shame if we are to grow in hope and joy. You know, this semester we've been looking at the Psalms. And just as the first part of the semester and this last half as we look at the Psalms, it is an invitation to you. It's an invitation to me to bring the deepest, most darkest parts of your heart, the emotions, to examine, to actually take your heart out and examine it before the Lord in a safe place. That may be scary, may be painful, but in a safe place where you can make sense of those emotions. That's what the Psalms are about. We're about to read again a Psalm of David that speaks about his heart open before us. It's something that I don't think we, as we read the Bible, oftentimes you read it and we don't think of it in these terms, but how honest and real and open David is actually being with his own sin, with his own shame. I want to invite you again tonight, as I have every week, to take inventory of your heart. Allow the Lord to come to you now. To not grow numb. Go before Him even silently in prayer as I even begin this sermon. To ask Him to show you again, to invite you out, to let you see the deepest, darkest parts of you in the safest place so that you can make not only make sense of them, but you can be redeemed in and through them through Jesus Christ. That's the power of the Psalms. And so as we look at Psalm 25, it's all about shame. It's bookended in shame. He bookends it from the first to the last verses about shame. And the two things that we really see here is actually what Cry of the Soul drew out, is that shame is extremely powerful. And it has the power to destroy you, but it also has the power to draw you to redemption, to draw you to change, transformation in Christ. So we're going to look at just those two things as we read this. And look for those things as we read this. The power of shame, either to destroy you. It has the power. How does shame destroy you? And also, how does it redeem you? Psalm 25. To you, O Lord, I lift up my soul. O my God, in you I trust. Let me not be put to shame. Let not my enemy exult over me. Indeed, none who wait for you shall be put to shame. They shall be ashamed who are wantonly treacherous. Make me to know your ways, O Lord. Teach me your paths. Lead me in your truth and teach me. For you are the God of my salvation. For you I wait all the day long. Remember your mercy, O Lord, and your steadfast love, for they have been from old. Remember not the sins of my youth or my transgressions. According to your steadfast love, remember me. For the sake of your goodness, O Lord. Good and upright is the Lord. Therefore, He instructs sinners in the way. He leads the humble in what is right and teaches the humble His way. All the paths of the Lord are steadfast love and faithfulness for those who keep His covenant and His testimonies. For your name's sake, O Lord, pardon my guilt, for it is great. Who is the man who fears the Lord? Him will He instruct in the way that he should choose. His soul shall abide in well-being, and His offspring shall inherit the land. The friendship of the Lord is for those who fear Him, and He makes known to them His covenant. My eyes are ever toward the Lord, for He will pluck my feet out of the net. Turn to me and be gracious to me, for I am lonely and afflicted. The troubles of my heart are enlarged. Bring me out of my distress. Consider my affliction and my trouble, and forgive all my sins. Consider how many are my foes, and with what violent hatred they hate me. O guard my soul, and deliver me. Let me not be put to shame, for I take refuge in you. May integrity and uprightness preserve me, for I wait for you. Redeem Israel, O God, out of all his trouble. You know, as we look at how shame destroys us, I think the first thing we just need to ask is, what is shame? What is shame? You know, oftentimes we think of shame as embarrassment. We talk about it in our culture, you know, you mess up like a faux pas of sorts. You do some social blunder and you feel ashamed, right? But the Bible really goes beyond that. The Bible actually says that shame is much greater, much deeper, much weightier than just simple embarrassment. It actually is the feeling of unworthiness. It's the feeling that you have when you do mess up, and it's not so much that you messed up, but you feel how horrible you are in that instance. How unloved you are. How not just not cool you are, but how you just are not, you feel like nobody at that moment. That feeling of shame, it's not just embarrassing, it hurts. It actually is deeply cutting. And what shame does in our culture, I think, we're oftentimes told that shame is something that we can get control of. It's something where you just need more self-esteem, that you need to look more in yourself. If you just have more confidence, then you wouldn't deal with shame. But the Bible here, and if you even noticed in the psalm as I read it, that David in his shame is not always looking back to himself. His gaze isn't back on him, it's away from himself. See, what shame does is it constantly points you back to you, right? What I did wrong, how I did not look, how I failed, right? It's constantly driving you to self. And it's not something either that's here's something interesting. I remember teaching at a church. I do this quite often, or I'm teaching or preaching. And a woman came up to me afterwards and said, I discussed shame for a moment, talked about how we operate out of shame, how we live out of shame, what it is, how powerful it is. And she came up to me and she said, "Oh man, those liberals, they just shame you. You know, all about those liberals." And I thought for a moment, wait a minute. In no way, shape, or form did I speak about that being a political maneuver. Okay? Shame is not something that's a cultural self-esteem issue. Shame is not something that's a political motivation. It's not a liberal or conservative thing. It's a you, me, and everybody thing. It's a problem that we all have. It's a problem we all deal with. It's not just something that we feel. It's something that we project on everyone else. We motivate not only ourselves, but everyone around us by shame. Because that's how we think things get done. That's how we think we can actually perfect ourselves. This is why you motivate yourself by shame, because you think shame, you and I both think shame, is what's going to make us better. If I can just shame myself enough into doing this, then I can actually see my life change. We do it in so many ways. And so shame is a deep unworthiness. But also how it destroys us is where it comes from. And David draws this out in two major ways. One is, if you notice all through here in different verses, in verse 2, 3, 19 through 20, he draws out these enemies, right? He says, "Oh my God, in you I trust. Let me not be put to shame. Let not my enemies exult over me," right? And later on he says in verse 19, "Consider how many are my foes, and with what violent hatred they hate me. Oh, guard my soul and deliver me. Let me not be put to shame, for I take refuge in you." One of the ways how shame comes to us is through our enemies. Now, in David's time here, excuse me, he's more than likely talking about enemies that may have been seeking his life or pursuing or, you know, crushing in on Jerusalem. But I think he makes it broad enough, and he doesn't specifically say what the historical account was, because he knows just as well as you and I know that shame is not limited to someone pursuing your life. Shame in the enemies are those voices that you've heard, the past, the present, and even the future of what you see. Those people, even family members, even dearest, closest friends, that say things to you that are so altering about your appearance, about how you study, about how you act, about how you're goofy, about how you dress. I mean, those small little ways even are the enemies that creep in your head that have shaped you all the way from even when you were small to now. You learn to live by shame. You learn to operate by shame. And what's interesting is, I think that to the degree that you feel shame about something is how you shame others about that event. If you feel great shame about appearance, you're looking around oftentimes judging and shaming others, whether out loud or to yourself, about how they appear. It's kind of like what I realized when I was a pledge trainer back in college, that when I was watching our fraternity members haze the pledges, which I'm sure doesn't go on here, that those who were the most hazed the most when they were no longer pledges, when they became members or actives. Those who are shamed, and to the degree in which you feel that deep shame, that deep punishing shame, I guess we're going to have a fire soon? I don't know. Let there be light. I'm going to do this. Every time I do this, one will come on. So, is the degree that you're going to look out to others and shame them. Think about it. Think about the ways that you feel deeply insecure in your life. Allow yourself to be honest in your seat right now. Think about the deep levels of insecurity that drive you in shame, about how you just don't measure up and how you are not loved. And think about the way that you look at others or how you hope they look at you. The enemies there are not just people who are enemies, quote unquote, out to take you, but they could be even friends that have said hard things. Do you operate your friendships out of shame? Do you attack one another out of shame? Do you motivate each other out of shame, hoping that people will respond to you in that way, hoping that people will change by being shamed? Nowhere in the Scriptures does it say that you are changed by shame. Shame drives you, but it doesn't change you. That's not what ultimately changes you here. And what's interesting about these passages is think about what this shame does. Look at what David says here in verse 16 and 17. He says, "Turn to me and be gracious to me, for I am lonely and afflicted." Isn't that what shame does? What shame does over and over is drive you to loneliness. Because say you're unbelievably ashamed about something in your life. It could be as something as deep as maybe you've encountered some sort of physical or sexual abuse in your life. Something so powerful that it just is eating you up inside, and you work so hard to keep anyone around you from knowing what's going on in you. It could be anything from deep as that to anything about just making yourself look good. But it's hard for you to be out of step. But the lonely, what it does, what does it do? It drives you back to yourself to be lonely. It makes you so lonely. You can't open up to people. You can't have people be with you. You can't have people surround you or really know you. All it does is drive you back to self. That's what shame does. That's how it destroys you. If you are here and you feel lonely, ask yourself, are you being destroyed by your shame? Are you being unwilling to go to someone and especially go before the Lord? Think about what David is doing here. Going before God with open heart to talk about his loneliness. God, I am lonely and afflicted. I am afflicted. And sometimes I feel like these words that we read here can go right past us because the depth of the meaning in the Hebrew is lost. But the deep affliction, the grating against us, against our hearts, the almost like sandpaper on the soft of your skin, just rubbing and rubbing away. The affliction, the pain. This deep shame and loneliness that it points us to. And even more so, look at the next passage there. The next verse it says, "The troubles of my heart are enlarged. Bring me out of my distress." It's not just enemies, but look what he does. One of the things we can do in shame easily is point outside of us. Say, that person shames me all the time. I always feel shame because of this person. But shame comes from here. It's not something outside of us. It's something that comes from our own hearts. Our own sin. And let me ask you this. Are you looking to everyone else? See, one of the things that shame does is it makes you a victim, right? You're always the victim. Are you the kind of person that sees yourself as always the victim? You're always the one that's attacked or is hurt. But see, shame is tricking you there even. It's destroying you even there. Because shame comes from your own sin and it can make you hard-hearted. David is not shy about this path in this psalm about his own sin, is he? I think one of the things that we don't do often enough is to really be honest about our sin, that we are sinners. See, what causes so much shame in our lives is the fact that we're so surprised that we sin. We're so surprised that we mess up. And we demand so much out of ourselves that when we do mess up, we just batter ourselves. We end up hating ourselves. That's what David is saying here when he says, "My heart is enlarged." Imagine that. The enlarging of his black and deep cauldron heart being as big as possible in front of him. And he even says, not just here, but the sins of his past, the sins of his youth. Guys, it's not just things that happened yesterday. It's the things that have been building for 18, 19, 20, 21, and even 22 years. And even 25 years for me. Those deep things of your heart that cause you to even not just hate others, but hate yourself. Shame drives you to that. I don't know if you ever remember this movie. It's very... Some of you were born in 1990, so you probably didn't see it. That's scary. Flatliners. It's an old movie. It was a fantastic movie. It had some of the greats in it. Julia Roberts, Kiefer Sutherland, Kevin Bacon, who's apparently in every movie. And it was a great movie about a bunch of med students, right? And they wanted to see, what was it like to go to death? What was it like to go into death and be in death as long as possible and then be brought back? And so they made this kind of hideout where they would actually test it on each other. And what was interesting about the movie is that when they die, and come back. It shows kind of them in their death and kind of some of their past. It shows their twisted past. When they come, when they're resuscitated and brought back, all of their sins come back with them. All of the things that you saw that they saw when they were dead actually begin to go on and come back into reality in their life. Things that they've tried to bury. The shame about their relationships. This one of the characters has major sexual relationship problems. Another one who killed someone. Others who have major family issues. And they all come back into this their lives and terrorize them. Because there's a great line from the movie Magnolia that actually says this, and it's perfect for this. It says, you may be through with your past, but your past is not through with you. It's a very interesting line of the movie. I don't know where they got it or who actually said it. But it's so true, and I think it's borrowed truth from the Scriptures, is that there is no way for you in your shame to escape your past. The sins of your past, the sins of your present, and the sins of your future. You are in need of redemption. Your shame can destroy you. And it will, if you let it. But how does shame, here's interesting, how does shame actually lead us to redemption here? How does it do that? Because your shame actually isn't just an end in of itself. It doesn't have to drive you just to self. Your shame about who you are can actually drive you. It can be an indicator. It can be an indicator light to flash on to say, hey, to drive you to mercy of God, to drive you to your need, to drive you to humility. It talks about how exposed and loved we are. Look at the very first verses here. To you, O Lord, I lift my soul. O my God, in you I trust. Let me not be put to shame. Guys, I think one of the most fitting things about shame, that's deeper than time itself, is the exposure. What shame does is we feel totally naked, right? You feel not only just unworthy and unloved, but you feel completely naked, exposed for all the world to see, and it is humiliating. What the gospel is saying here, what David is giving to us, though, is the fact that we can be exposed and still be loved. You and I don't get that concept. The reason you hide from even your best friends about the deepest parts of your soul, the reason husbands hide from their wives from their husbands, children from their parents, family members hide from one another and are so deathly afraid to even bring up things and will not, is because if things are exposed, there is no love. No one will love me if they actually knew. If my stuff was thrown up here on the screen, I'm deathly afraid that you would leave. I am. It's not something. It's not just a platitude for you. I'm deathly afraid that if you knew the depth, the darkness, the nasty of me, there's no way you'd be sitting here listening to me. The exposure, though, of what David is saying is that we can be completely exposed and actually completely loved in the deepest parts of you, the parts of you that don't think at all could be loved, parts of you that you're so disgusted with that you cannot stand looking at yourself in a mirror. You cannot stand the fact that you try and try and try, but you cannot catch up. In life, in school, in relationships. Guys, this exposure is real and good. Shame is actually a good thing here to drive you to say, hey, you are exposed, you're naked. Think about the reason why you and I hate so much God's grace. I know that sounds funny, but you and I hate it because every time God's grace comes, or we are shown grace, even in real everyday life, why do we keep having to make up for it? Why, when you're late to something, you keep having to apologize over and over after the person was saying, no, that's no big deal. You can't let it go. Why can you not let the shame about being a bad Christian, not knowing enough about Christianity? Shame about all sorts of things. Why is it? Because when grace comes along, you can't do anything about it. And we want to. We think we should be able to. But the redemptive part of this, what shame does is it drives us to redemption to say, you can't. You can't do a thing about it. Think about what David says here. It's an amazing verse, verse 8. He says, good and upright is the Lord. Therefore He instructs sinners in the way. How in the world does a good and upright Lord go with sinners in the way that they live? How in the world can those two things go together? The only way is through the cross. The only way holiness and sinfulness can actually meet is through costly relationship. It's through the cost, a deep, major, massive cost that goes further than your own shame. And it has to come through Jesus, the one who took on that shame. Listen to what Hebrews 12, verse 2 says. Looking to Jesus, the founder and perfecter of our faith, who for the joy that was set before Him endured the cross, despising the shame, and is seated at the right hand of the throne of God. Shame is redemptive because it shows us that we have a God who bears our shame. Our Jesus, Jesus Christ, is what it says here, for His joy of you, the joy of Jesus to despise the shame, that He bore your shame. He bore the shame that you have about your sexual relationships. He bore the shame you have about cheating on your tests. He bore the shame you have about not having a job when you graduate. He bore the shame about you feeling disgusted with every part of you. He bore it, and He continues to bear it. He bears it now. He doesn't throw it off. He doesn't say, great, that's one thing I'll take care of. He still bears it. Shame, let shame be an indicator light, not to drive you to yourself, but what David is saying is it drives us away from yourself. The only way your shame can be dealt with is to drive you away from yourself to the only one who can bear your shame. Because your shoulders are not strong enough. And you know that. I know that. We cannot handle it. And it's incredible here that He not only in redemption bears that. We're exposed in love, but He teaches us a whole new life. All of this, if you notice, He says, teach me a new way. Show me the way. I don't know if you know this, but in early Christianity, and it's even written in Acts, Christians were called people of the way. Christianity was called the way. Why was that? Well, because this was a new way, a totally new, not a revision of where you are, not just telling you you need some supplements for it to get you through this, but saying, hey, God, teach me a new way, a whole new way to live. How do you deal with your shame over and over? When you feel it, here I'm giving you some practical application. When you feel your shame, not if, you should be feeling shame. When you are, stop in that moment and look at it and go, why am I feeling shame? What is this driving me to? What am I worshiping here? And take that before the Lord. Don't let it drive you to selfishness. Let it drive you to sorrow. You and I hide from God because of our selfishness. Sorrow is something good to actually encounter. You should actually feel sorrow. You should actually feel the sorrow of your sin, the weight of it, to drive you to Jesus, to drive you to Him. It's different here. He doesn't say humiliation. He says humility. It's a new way, a new life, a new travel. It changes the way you see shame because it uncovers the places where you need love. I love Megan said this to me, and she learned this through a friend of ours, John Cox, who's a counselor. He says, to the degree that we feel shame is the degree that we need love in those places. To the degree that you feel shame is the same degree that you need love in that place that you feel that shame. So therefore, take that love, know where the only love is the one who has borne that and continues to in Christ. And you can have that. And it's a slow process. It's something you work at. It's something you take to God over and over. When I was, just a few, I think it was a year or so ago, I was in Houston. I feel like I started with a Jonah story, I'll end with a Jonah story. Jonah was learning how to slide down the slide, but he was really afraid of it. And he felt kind of like ashamed of where he was and how he was in this big twisty slide at the pool where they go and swim. And so I began to kind of walk with him through it. It was so interesting to see him process how to grow, how to be big and strong, and go down the slide. And first, it took me actually putting him on my lap and like clenching him and going down while he was screaming. And, no, he wasn't screaming. But I've said it earlier. But he really was kind of like gripping me and kind of like hold, like trying to hold the sides. You know when you're trying to hold the sides? You kind of do that anyway to stop it up so people run into your back. And so he's sitting there, you know, you hear the screeching of his hands going all the way down. And slowly but surely, he began to see that it's okay. That he could actually not, and I put him down in front of me and I let him feel my feet. And then slowly we would do that. It took a long time. And then finally I said, okay, I'll be right behind you. And I just kind of let him go. And he started getting it. He started recognizing it. He started recognizing what? Not just that he could slide, but that he was big and strong. That he knew what his fear was about going down the slide. And he had someone there with him. And it's not so much that God lets us go. God is always carrying you. But that's the hope you have, is that in those moments of deep shame, is that you're not trying to process that alone, that you go with your Lord, always having His arms wrapped around you, always teaching you and showing you that way, so that you know the difference between shame that drives you to self and shame that drives you to being exposed and known for all your darkness. And yet you're loved in the deepest places that you could ever imagine. Let's pray. Father in heaven, your kindness and your love exceeds anything that we could ever imagine. Lord, use the faultiness of even my lips, the way that my preaching or any hindrance that could come in this room, break open our hearts to see the majesty of our King Jesus, who, despising the shame, took up the cross because He had joy, and His joy was us. It is us. And Lord, help us to fight our shame, to actually deal with our shame, to recognize it, to see it more as an indicator of us being driven to mercy, not to ourselves, not to just doing it better, but knowing how loved we are more in that shame. And God, I pray this in Jesus. Amen.